Hello and welcome to another edition of the In the Money Players Podcast, going daily for the racing days at Keeneland. So excited to be working with our friends at Keeneland and Keeneland Sales this meet as well. Every day they run, we're going to have some thoughts today. Your host, Peter Thomas Fornital, back with you in the Brooklyn Bunker once again, is joined once again by a man who was here yesterday, whose work you've seen over at InTheMoneyPodcast.com on the In the Money Plus side, covering Keeneland on the weekend with his diaries. And he's also been helping us all year long with our Kentucky Derby top 10 lists. Eric DeCoster, welcome back to the show.
Very excited to be here. Always love talking Keeneland.
So yesterday we talked about a double strategy. You know, we're promoting these doubles heavily this meet at Keeneland. They've dropped from 22% to 15% in terms of takeout. Incredibly player-friendly and very player-friendly anyway, just in terms of level of difficulty. People, I think, often underrate how difficult it is every time you add a leg to a parlay-type bet. You know, when you go from the pick three to the pick four, when you go from the pick four to the pick five to pick six, they become exponentially more difficult, and people often don't give enough credence to that. Another amazing thing about the double, you have an advantage in terms of price discovery. Yes, they can move, but at least you can see that probable screen and you can use that signal to know what you're getting, get some more intelligence about horses in the second leg, et cetera, et cetera. There's a lot of good things you could do. So the strategy I talked about for the double on yesterday's show was basically having one horse and looking to play doubles into and out of that horse. On this show, I'm going to just talk about getting a lot more narrow with a double and just trying to take some shorter prices and turning them into something a little bit more appealing in terms of risk and reward. Of course, you can also bet the same horses individually to win and use the double in this instance as a bit of a top up. We'll start in race number six. We've got an allowance race for fillies and mares going a mile in the 16th. I'm handicapping this race with the assumption that it is on turf. I think, you know, surprise, surprise, if it comes off the main track only, Story Hour probably becomes the one you'll want to look at. But, you know, let's be optimists and say we think this race is going to stay on. I'm a big fan of Papilio. We've got, you know, friends involved in this horse, of course, with Medallion Racing, who are going to be once again sponsoring our Kentucky Derby show. I followed this horse very closely. You know, she's had close calls. She's not, you wouldn't call her a win machine. But boy, does she seem to me to be knocking on the door now in this second start of her four-year-old year. I mean, granted, probably still bigger things ahead for her in terms of stakes going forward. But I was very curious to see how she was going to get on and thought she might be a horse I was willing to try to get a little bit of extra juice by playing in a double back to the scene of her best triumph. She won that Appalachian last year on opening weekend. And, you know, just one that really appeals to me. Do you think I'm with the right one, Eric, here in the form of Papilio in race six, or did you want to bring in something at a little bit more of a price?
Absolutely. No, you're dead on here. She just is so classy. She's literally only lost to stakes winners. Whether that's in Europe in her first few starts or here. And I'm sure last time out when they brought her back in allowance, they didn't think they'd run into a very nice Florida-bred mare and sweet Danny girl in the barn of Christoph Clement now, who has just always been a hard knocker, always around this level. So it just makes a lot of good sense, right? Second off the bench, finding horses here. There is no sweet Danny girl type in here who is a true stakes horse, also looking for some relief. So it's the right time to get back in the winner's circle.
I like it. Good. So we've got some agreement there. Let's move to the back end of this double, but I'm going to let you kick it off because this was the 7-8 double was the one that you were looking to get involved in today. And yeah, for me, I was going to try to get away with a couple of long shots in this spot, but very curious where you landed, what it is you want to play in this seventh race.
So this is a horse that I have a I wouldn't even say a love-hate relationship because I usually don't like him on form, but this is the time where I have to put aside my grievances and go to him, even though he is going to be a short price. You said you're going for the long shot, so I'm interested to hear because I still am a little conflicted, but the three Cook Creek, his form is so muddy, but he's also been running against some much tougher horses than this. I've just been waiting for the day where they dropped him a little bit in class to see what he can do. But then you dig deep, you look at really his only two good recent runs came here at Keeneland, and they came against First Mission and Command Performance and Time for Trouble and Creative Minister. Those are all bona fide stakes, high level allowance horses. That's tough company. So I think there's clearly something in the water here in that he likes about Keeneland. This is the right configuration or whatever. And obviously that's backed up by the fact he's not running against slouches. He's running against some very high level company. So I'm biting the bullet because it's just finally the time, it seems, for this horse to get on track.
My only fear really with him, I respect him, I just worry about him getting too far back in a race that doesn't seem to have a ton of pace signed on. Don't hate the idea, and this is a situation where looking in that double pool from race 6 to race 7, I can sort of decide, hey, do I want to cover with Cook Creek or do I want to get involved in the doubles with these long shots? And then, hey, maybe I can bet Cook Creek in the win pool to cover my stake or cover the stake or the potential winnings if I'm alive. You'd have a lot of options. I definitely think you're onto a super logical horse, but let me tell you some goofy angles and you could tell me if I might be onto something. Timeform has stirred a pot very loose in this spot. This is a horse that's run inefficiently fast in the last two starts, and two back on dirt really slowed to a walk, stuck on okay at a huge price at this exact claiming level up at Turfway last time, was beaten by Yono in the process that day. But based on the pace angle, I didn't think it was insane to throw this horse in. I mean, Nick guessed 20-1 on the morning line. This horse is going to be a price. So I thought that, as a potential lone speed runner, one that I wanted to have in there. And then another one listed at 15-1 on Nick's line that I thought was worth maybe messing around with in this spot was the 6 CFV Bullet, a horse who has shown speed in the past and I thought might be able to get a pretty good trip in behind second flight, no worse than mid pack. And while the better races are on the lead, sometimes, an adjustment of tactics just because of the way today's race shakes out can bring about improvement. And I just thought that on the numbers, CFV Bullet looked too strong to let go away at a very big price. And again, we don't have to, this isn't the third leg of a pick three where we just are following the morning line educated guess. We'll be able to see exactly what these things pay. So that was more or less my short list in this race. Most interest in the 4 and the 6. And I will take a little bit of a look at the 3 as well. You give any count to either of those prices?
I agree with you a lot on CFB Volat. He's who I fear the most from this group, actually, because he does his best work around two turns. And obviously they sprinted him last time, clearly to get him ready for this spot. But before that, last year, he was running very competitive races, maybe beaten a touch far here and there, but those were much tougher opponents. So he also, in addition to Cook Creek, finds a little relief, and he's got some decent numbers to go back on. I agree with the point you kind of made that he does do his best work on the lead, and it's just clear that Stir to Pot's going to be faster than him early because that's just what he does. So that was my one skepticism, where I was confident if I'm attacking this, I can go at it with Cook Creek alone. But I do find him intriguing and might even try to get him involved in some other ways in this race. But I do agree there's a strong case to be made.
I don't want to get into too much Rosario bashing, but it's one of those things for me where this feels like the type of ride that sometimes he can struggle with because of his seeming desire to always want to be first or last. Mm-hmm. It feels like getting last could be tricky, especially, and we'll see with the rain, who knows. But I mean, it did seem like a track that was kind to speed as well. Another reason that I was thinking of taking a demonstrably slower horse in the 4 Stir to Pot over a faster horse like Cook Creek. But we'll see how it plays out in race number 7. Let's get your thoughts on race number 8 as we go to this turf allowance mile and an eighth. Another one that has a couple of main track onlys, but hopefully we'll be staying on the turf. Who do you like in here?
Yes, and I really can't have this race come off the turf because there's a horse I love on the MTOs for Friday's Journal. I believe it's Friday at least. Journal that I don't want him to scratch for this spot. So
right.
we're gonna hope that we stay
double
on the grass.
Reasons. Yes.
Yes, exactly. But this is another one where I kind of like for Wednesday that I was hoping to get through with one horse and then give myself multiple opportunities at decent prices in the last. So there's four names I'm really intrigued by, but there's one that I need to have, and that's the two Bay Street Money. This is a horse who clearly lost his way his last few starts of 2023, and then they gave him some time, and he needed that time. But before that, he was delivering just about every start against some tough company, and I just love that he gets back to Keeneland, where I thought he, even though it wasn't his best race on form, it was one of the best races he's run in his career. At least when I say by form, I mean, you know, his buyer isn't as strong as some losses he's had, but I thought visually it was the best run he's put together. And I believe that he's going to get a very similar trip. So it all comes together. And I love that Tyler Gaffalione gets back aboard. If you haven't been able to tell through the Journal or other shows I've done, I'm maybe one of the biggest Tyler Gaffalione fans out there. So it's just icing on the cake. Those other ones, the Mother Mike Maker chasing the crown, very good form. He's posted these low to mid 90s that I wouldn't say tower, but make him a very, very, very logical horse in this spot. And then the other two, the 11 Santorini, he's a tough read, but he has some really good class to him. And I think he's got a really good run at Keeneland to go back on a career high buyer in October. So he's a logical and limited liability is a horse that I've gone against the last two times he's run at Keeneland. Or I shouldn't say the last two times. His first two times at Keeneland, I went against him and he beat me and made me pull my hair out. So he clearly likes the track. He can clearly overcome the fact it's probably a touch short for him because he did it both times. So he's one that I'm going to have to include because I can't get beat by him one more time.
What about the other McGahee runner while we're talking about limited liability in this spot? Fort Washington. That's a horse that I've always had a little bit of an affinity for. I've bet him a couple of times and not a huge winning sort, but certainly not too far out of it on numbers. You're willing to stand against him based on the price or the post or combination?
I don't need to be against him. I have him jotted down as a hard to trust type, kind of like you were saying. Yeah. He doesn't love to win, but I think you can afford it in this situation where we're talking about the double, where if I do have just one horse in my first leg, if I throw in a fifth horse, my input's not really raising too much. So it's absolutely fair. And the only reason it was for, you know, penny pinching sake more so than being against him. It's not like I'm really pinching many pennies though. No, he comes with a run. It's just a question of, are they stopping for you or are you coming fast enough? So I totally do see it. His win at Aqueduct two starts ago was very sharp. And that is what he can do on his best day. And he showed he doesn't need to be that far back. I was only discouraged because in the Fort Lauderdale, when there was no pace and they kind of wired him out, or Main Event did that day, there wasn't any initiative from Luis Saez, a very aggressive guy, to maybe get more involved. I know he was kind of wide at times, but felt like there could have been some better things there. So I just don't know if they're willing to get aggressive with the tactics here on a horse who might just want to sit a little closer to the lead than they lead on.
Yeah, and the in those situations, the post can become an issue too.
Correct.
The prop bet I want in this race would be the Makers against the McGahees. I respect the McGahee runners, but I do think, you know, both are going to probably catch a little bit more money than I want them to, given the challenges. And I like both of the Maker runners, especially Chasing the Crown would be a fairly sizable top pick for me. Third start off the layoff here, and I think is just going to be able to sit in a good spot mid pack, maybe slightly further back than that, and be able to get the jump on those deeper closers under ERAD. And you know, you made a great case on Bay Street Money. I was, my hunch aspect of this one is, way back in the day, I was a big fan of his. Collect the Cash was a cool horse. I remember betting it at Saratoga and elsewhere, and just has class. And a lot of times when a lot of the logical horses are all posted out wide, it can come down to trip, and Bay Street Money should pull a really good trip from down there into two. So some nice looking Nice looking workouts, too, for the return to the races. A lot of arrows pointing in this direction of a 10-1 shot. 9-2, mainly for me. I name-checked you, Eric, as 2, 9, 11, and 12. While I have you, you mentioned the journal. Give folks an idea of what it is that you do in there.
We cover a lot, and I like to cover a lot. We typically start with some trends, and one of the big ones that I look at that I hope people do enjoy, I get decent feedback on it to begin with, but we look at how the race has played out in terms of race shape and pace to kind of see, you know, there's been a lot of chatter. Was there a speed bias? Or most people have pronounced there was a speed bias at Keeneland this opening weekend. But then when I kind of sift through the numbers and present my chart, it looks like it played kind of fair. It's just circumstances, unfortunately, yeah, line up where pace is holding up. So that's one of my favorite things we cover. And we also cover a few other things. And then I get into my favorite maiden of the day, my favorite pace angle of the day, and then just my overall best bet of the day. And obviously, those can be hit or miss because that's horse racing. But we enjoy it. And at the end of the day, we're putting out good discussion. And that's what matters. If I can create some talk or plant some thoughts in people's minds, that's what really matters.
People in this audience are interested. Obviously, they want winners. Who doesn't? But really interested in good analysis, and you offer that every day. Yeah, I think I alluded to something about that. The track was kind to speed. I don't think that's wrong. Maybe a better way to say it is not unkind to speed. It's. I wouldn't call it a particular bias either, I don't think. But it's not something. I'd rather have it than not have it at this point. It's always a little tricky, especially in dirt racing, to trust these deeper closers. You also mentioned Gaffleon and your affinity for him. Obviously, some of it is because he wins and he gets great mounts. But what is it you like about him specifically in the saddle, whether tactically or from a technique point of view?
He is such a efficient rider. I was actually talking about this with some people in my racing office here at Oaklawn. We were, of course, watching Keeneland because that's what everyone in racing should be doing. And just talking about how he is so steady in the saddle and he knows how to put horses in the right position to win. He clearly understands how to read a form, which, you know, it's fair to say not every jockey can. He is a tactician. He is efficient and he rarely ever loses a stretch battle. If I see Tyler Gaffleon out in the clear, coming into the lane, I feel very good about my chances that he's going to hold on. So it's a comforting feeling when you can watch for 25 seconds and you know you're not going to get beat, even though you're only about a length up. So he's the total package, in my opinion. And obviously, when you're winning at 25% through one of the toughest meets in the nation year in and year out, that backs it up to a sense.
Great stuff. Eric, we'll have you back soon to check out the Keeneland Journal in themoneypodcast.com/plus. Go to our YouTube channel. Check out the videos we're doing based on Eric's top 10 list. Going to have a ton more YouTube content this week, including our Kentucky Derby draft, which we're filming a little bit later today. Eric, can't wait to talk to you again. This was a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Let's do it again.
Good stuff. Well, thank Eric one more time. Thank our In the Money Plus subscribers. Everybody who subscribe, wherever, if you subscribe to us anywhere, whether that's podcast, YouTube, or Plus, I'll put out a special thank you with this show. That kind of support really helps, like more than you might even know, in terms of you know, the algorithms and things that help people find us. Another great thing, especially this time of year, word of mouth. If you've got horse racing people in your lives, tell them to check us out wherever they want to consume their media, whether that's YouTube, newsletter, website in themoneypodcast.com, or of course, podcast. We'll be back real soon. Going to have shows for Friday and Saturday as well. Till the next time, I'm Peter Thomas Fornatel. May you win all your photos.